Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Nathan Ramsey. I'm with Landisca Regional Council, and according to my clock, it's 1 o'clock, so we'll get started to try to move this along. We appreciate everybody joining us today. We've been holding these weekly calls since, I guess, the end of March, early April, to try to help our region better respond to the COVID-19 health pandemic and also the economic crisis that has resulted from COVID-19. So, today we're going to hear an update from Governor Cooper's office. We really appreciate Drew Christie with the governor's office joining us. And Drew's been really faithful to share with us for many of these calls. Drew is the Western representative for Governor Cooper. And then later on, we're going to have a discussion today on substance use disorders. Unfortunately, COVID-19 did not wipe away the challenges that our region and our state and our nation are facing with substance use disorders. Understandably, the spotlight has probably, been focused on COVID-19 response, but really wanted to take some time to talk about the challenges that we're dealing with today. So appreciate everyone for joining us. Before we get started, just remind everyone, these calls are being taped. So we try to place the recordings of the calls on the Landisca website at landisca.org. And you are, again, we ask you to keep yourself muted during the call, if possible, to avoid any background noise or other distractions. So with that, I'll turn it over to Drew Christie with Governor Cooper's office. And Drew, thank you for joining us, and we appreciate you giving us an update on the latest news from the governor's office.
Thank you, Nathan, for having me, and thank you to the Landisca Regional Council for hosting these meetings. As per usual, I'll start out with numbers and then move into some more some other information. So as of today, there have been a total of 238,939 cases of COVID-19, with yesterday having a total of 2,532 cases reported, which is extremely high. And there will be a press conference today held by the governor and Secretary Mandy Cohen at 3 o'clock. And you can view that on your local UNC TV channel or through online through DPS or NCDHHS's website. And Secretary Cohen will cover some of these numbers in greater detail and talk about all our current trends and metrics. But I'll just hit these highlights here. So again, we had over 2,500 cases yesterday. It's not a good thing. There have been almost 3.5 million tests completed, and there are currently 1,140 people hospitalized due to COVID-19. Breaking that out by county, Madison County has 134 confirmed cases. Buncombe County has 3,674 cases. Henderson County has 2,282 cases. And Transylvania County has 369 cases. Moving over to unemployment numbers here. As of yesterday, October the 5th, or through today, I guess, October the 15th. So it's rough, what is that, 7 months now since March 15th, there have been $8.3 billion paid out in unemployment claims. There have been 908,000 claimants paid, which is 69% of all people that have applied have been approved for benefits. There are currently 15,000 people pending resolutions from state benefits. So DES is still moving right along, getting these payments out to folks that need it. So moving off of numbers here, again, want to reiterate this just so everybody can have all of the important facts and figures about COVID-19. Governor Cooper and members of the Coronavirus Task Force will be holding an update today at 3 o'clock to go over all of our numbers and trends. Also, I'm sure everybody on this call has already done so, but please let your friends, family, anybody you know that may not have filled out the census. Today is the last day to complete the census. It's so important so our region can make sure we're getting the adequate federal funding that we need to move forward. Also, since the census is ending today, surprisingly enough, early voting has started today. No matter what party affiliation you hold, please go out and vote. You know, your vote, your voice is so important. So please go out and do that. It's your civic duty to vote. So I highly encourage everybody to take time. Yes, wait lines are long. That's a good thing. Good engagement on both sides of the aisle. So we just want to see people out there and vote. And with that, Nathan, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you so much, Drew. Appreciate that update from the governor's office. And maybe one day you can give us sort of a preview of what the governor is going to announce at his 3 o'clock press conference. I know you always leave us hanging, but I know that probably want to leave those announcements for the governor, but really appreciate you sharing with us. And if y'all have any questions for Drew, just please enter that in the chat function of this call. Just want to also remind people that one of those early voting sites, if you happen to be in Buncombe County, live in Buncombe County, the Land of Sky Regional Council office has been closed to the public, but we've allowed Buncombe County to use our office as an early voting location. So we're located on Lester Highway in West Asheville. So the wonderful thing in early voting, and regardless of which county you live in, you can vote at any of the early voting locations in that county. And also, if you're not registered to vote, you can register and vote the same day, at the same time, at early voting. And that's different from election day. So early voting is a great opportunity. And again, as Drew mentioned, regardless who you vote for, we encourage you to go out and vote and encourage your friends and neighbors to do so as well. Before I start the presentation on substance use disorders, I also want to remind everyone the WNC Career Expo is going on. So if you know of individuals looking for a job in our region, please go to WNCCareerExpo.com. There's over 40 companies with thousands of job opportunities available in our region. Those employers are from multiple counties in the region. And, you know, this is normally our largest hiring event of the year. Unfortunately, we can't have it at a physical location where we would draw over 1,000 people like we've done in the past. This is online, so it's a virtual job fair, but it will go through tomorrow at 5 p.m. So again, please encourage people to do that. If they don't have internet access or they need computer access, they can use their local NC Works Career Center. And there's a computer access that they can have for their job search. So just remind everyone about that. But today we're going to talk about substance use disorders. And so we know of the opioid crisis and the challenges that has posed, and just substance abuse disorders in general. And unfortunately, with the COVID-19 crisis, some of that spotlight has been taken away. But unfortunately, substance use disorder crisis has not gone away. In some ways, it may be heightened as people are under additional stress. So we're honored to have several folks with us today. And I'm going to turn the program over to Philip Cooper with AB Tech. Philip is one that I always go to is my residence expert. He's a peer support specialist. He has lived experience, and he works with many community partners throughout our region to help individuals tackle their addictions, to come clean, and get on the path so they can, you know, support their family and take advantage of a wonderful career for them. So, Philip, thank you for joining us. And I don't know if you want to introduce the your colleagues who are joining with us today, but and I think we also have Glenn Phil with the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. He's joining us right now. So Philip, I'll turn it over to you, and thank you again for joining.
Oh yeah, thank you. Thank you for the invitation, sir, Nathan. It's a blessing, it's an honor, it's a privilege to be here, you know, speaking on this topic, especially being someone who is in long-term recovery. You know, it's such a blessing to be here speaking on this topic. And it's sad that I can't go to the career expos in person, man. That's like one of my favorite things to do. I'm like my daughters in Walmart. I'll tell them they got 15 minutes to go on the toy set in the toy section if they behave in Walmart. And they're so indecisive and running back and forth the aisles. That's the way I am in the career expos. Man, I miss them. But yeah, so I have my friends here from Mayhek, man. They're doing some amazing work. They have a team of change agents, peer support specialists, walking testimonies, recovery warriors, demon stompers. Hello, how you doing? So, I mean, do y'all want to go first, Mayhek? Because I know y'all had something coming up after this. I don't have to get back to the Appalachian Leadership Institute until 2 o'clock. So if y'all want to go first and just kind of give an update about what y'all doing, I can finish it up.
Okay. I can hop in real quick and then I can turn it over to, I was telling Nathan that Kevin and Rachel are on this call and they are far cooler than me anyway. So I'll just talk for a few quick moments and then you can hear from the real change agents, the real demon stompers after that. But hi everyone. It is also a pleasure to be here. My name is Dana Choquette. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and I'm the manager for care coordination in the psychiatry department at Mayhek. Mayhek, as Phil alluded to, is doing some real cool stuff right now in the peer support world. Kevin Mahoney was first off the only peer that Mayhek had. For about a year and a half, Kevin worked in our office-based opioid treatment program, which is a subset of our family medicine department. And he, not surprisingly, built a massive caseload of folks who are in various stages of recovery from opioid or other substance use, and they're getting consistent office-based support for that. And so those are folks who, you know, may be on Suboxone, they may not, they may have other persistent mental health concerns. And Kevin really came alongside all of those folks and offered that trusted caregiver support without the intensity of the white lab coat. And I think that is kind of the coolest part of the peer support model, is that it's really trusted and well-educated normal people. It's lay people from our community, all of which have their own lived experiences with mental health concerns or with substance use challenges, but they have found recovery. They found stability and success. And what better people to mentor and come alongside patients who are earlier on in their journey than folks who know it far better than a lot of folks within the healthcare system. So after Kevin, you know, grand slammed it for the first 18 months, Mayhek said, well, shoot, maybe we should get some more of y'all, get some more peers out here. And so they basically agreed to fund 5 full-time peer supports. So we currently have 4 and we're in the process of hiring a 5th. And we're also building out an ACT team in our psychiatry department. And so we'll have a peer on that team too at some point. And all of our peers are supporting, they're based out of our Biltmore campus down on Hendersonville Road, but they are able to support folks in all of the surrounding counties of Western North Carolina, all of the counties that Mayhek serves. And one of the things, if I can just really toot the horn of these folks, is that they are true wizards in terms of helping folks, one, navigate the healthcare system. So navigate any concerns that they have around their diagnoses, around the medication they're being prescribed, around managing the multitude of appointments that they may have. And I guess I should apologize if some of this is redundant, if some of the folks on here are already familiar with the peer support model, I thank you for your patience as I describe what you likely are already familiar with. But nonetheless, it's important to know that one, the peers can help folks navigate through the complexity of the healthcare system, but they also do so much more than that. They really are caring and compassionate folks that help people's basic needs get met, but also have a goal for their own individual desires. So for instance, a person that Rachel just worked with today, one of his primary goals, he has two primary goals. One, to taper eventually off Suboxone, and two, to get his GED. Those are super straightforward types of goals that we can help folks get. And immediately after talking to that guy, Rachel already reached out to her connection with helping folks get GEDs. And now the ball will get rolling for that person. So not only is he getting quality primary care and substance abuse treatment, but he's also getting his GED, which will hopefully lead to gainful employment for him and a longer term path of sustainable sobriety. So anyway, I could go on and on about these folks, but they really are the change makers. I thank you, Phil, for letting us be on this, for inviting us to be on this call with you. One thing that I just want to shout out around Philip, who I actually just met pretty recently. I'm new to the Asheville area. And one of our other peers said, before you meet anyone, you need to meet Philip. you can't do effective peer work unless you meet Philip. It was two people. They said, you need to meet Kevin and you need to meet Philip. So I already had Kevin on my team. So I said, okay, let's meet Philip. And it was true. It was true right off the bat. Phil really went out of his way to connect our team with other community agencies. And we already have a few folks that he is supporting who were recently released from prison. And we're hoping to get them on our caseload to get them primary care here at MAHEC if they don't have primary care providers, to help get them insured if they need it, or really to just help integrate them back into the Asheville area with an army of people who want to see them succeed. I think my final thing that I'll say in terms of how this all relates to COVID, it's a dark time for folks who even have tons of support and don't have persistent substance use challenges. I think all of us on this call can likely say that at some point or many points between March and where we are now, it's been hard. And so I, you know, again, preaching to the choir here, but those folks who are experiencing challenging issues of comorbidity between mental health issues and substance use, this is a truly impossible time for a lot of folks to access care. Especially if they don't have means to good technology use. All, you know, AA meetings, NA meetings, most of them are virtual now. And if people don't have access to good Wi-Fi from where they live, then that's a huge barrier to them. So what the peer supports here have been doing is a combination of virtual and in-person support to meet the needs of our folks. So a lot of our peers have been driving out to their to our families, to their houses, standing on their porches with our masks on, or coming in at a socially distanced space with our masks on to help meet our new patients, or similarly having them, some of our patients even are coming in right now for a virtual meeting. So they're sitting in one room and they're WebExing or Skyping into another room just so that they can have access to the virtual setup. So we're really trying to do whatever the heck we can to meet our folks in this especially challenging time. And I think so far we're off to a great start. So I'll stop there. Is there any questions that folks have, or should I go ahead and turn it on over to Kevin and Rachel to see if they have anything else to add? I'll check the chat too.
Yeah, Dana, thank you so much. And to your point, you know, I think substance use disorders right now aren't just getting the attention they were prior to COVID-19, because we've been so focused on all the challenges with COVID-19. But, you know, I think that's a great understanding of, you know, that this is additional stress and additional challenges for this population. So, you know, part of the purpose of this call is to remind everyone, let's don't put this on the back priority list. This has got to get to a top priority in our region because it is so impactful to the region. So we appreciate you joining us, and you can turn it over to your team. We're also blessed to have Glenn Phil with the North Carolina Division of Health and Human Services. He's with the Office of Rural Health. So go ahead and introduce your team, Dana, and thank you for joining us, and glad you're in our region, and glad you made the connection with Philip.
Great. I have one question, Nathan. Could someone in your discussion here give us the process for referrals? Who do we refer to if we're speaking with someone who we think might be helped by your organization? Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, great question. I can speak to specifically to Mahek, and then Philip, if you want to hop in for anybody else that's in your world. The referral process is relatively simple. I'm going to put my email here in the chat box, and that's actually the best way to first reach out to me and see if the person you have in mind would be a good fit. I see Heather in the chat box. Also, feel free to send me an email about this, and I'll connect you about Madison County resources. But the basic step, Barbara, is going to be send me an email, give me a little bit of basic information about who this person is and why you think peer support might help them. Also, just some general info to know is that if they have Medicaid, peer support is entirely free to them. If they are uninsured, it's likely that we can get them hooked up with VIA for the service also to be free. If they have private insurance, there likely will be a small copay, but typically it's pretty affordable. If there is any financial barriers, please still send them and we will try to get them connected through our financial care department. If they're already a MAHEC patient, so say you send me an email about Dana and she wants peer support. And if Dana is already a MAHEC patient, it is real simple. But if she's not, we can get her, we can absolutely still get her signed up for peer support. We could also then link her to some primary care options if she needs them. So if she says, yeah, I actually, you know, I don't have a dentist. Can I go to the dentist while I'm here too? We can get that new patient paperwork filled out for her really quickly. Or honestly, a lot of our folks can just receive peer support. That may be the only, you know, if they already have a great setup with a dentist, with a psychiatrist elsewhere, that's completely fine. They can just get peer support from MAHEC and we'll help get them started. So send me an email and then I'll roadmap for you where to go next with that person. Cool. All right. I'm going to introduce, I think that Rachel is still around here and Kevin. So if you two have your videos on, perfect, perfect. So Kevin Mahoney is a certified peer specialist and he also is a trainer of peer supports. So he's been around the block. He knows all the stuff and he is extremely helpful, especially in terms of community resources in the Asheville and Buncombe area. And then we have Rachel Barefoot, who also is a certified peer support. And she has experience working with youth in the area and then also in transitional housing. So they both bring a wealth of experience. So I'll turn it over to them. And anything y'all want to add about what the heck you do, come in now.
Go for it, Rach.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for letting me be on this meeting. I'm so glad these conversations are happening. It's 2020. It's the season for change, and it's the season for taking away the stigma that surrounds substance abuse disorders and mental illness, incarceration, all the things. Really, Dana pretty much summed it all up, but I'm a person that is in long-term recovery, just like Philip, and I've dedicated my life to helping other peers that just want to learn how to live or just need someone to talk to. This is something that we do together, connection. That's all I got to say about peers is connection. Yeah, go ahead.
That's a good segue. Dr. Gabor Mate, who really has the science of addictive behaviors and addictive brain patterns, has several good books. One's called, I think it's Life with the Hungry Ghosts, about meth addiction. He is under the idea that the opposite of addiction is community. And I've heard that resonate on several TED Talks. Johan Hari, who's a Canadian journalist, uses that frequently in terms of describing how to help people get better. And the thing that peer support, aside from coming across as an authentic presence with people who have been there and done that, sometimes, I mean, I think it's magic. Sometimes it amazes me just by saying, I have been in recovery or wellness for 15 years. And I was home before that. I was homeless for three. I'm a combat veteran, and I can describe a little piece of my story. And people go, "Well, if you can get better, then maybe I can get better." And it's, again, just by showing up sometimes. And again, it's not as easy as that, but sometimes it is as easy as that, just to get your foot in the door to talk to somebody. And again, we're easier to talk to or approach than somebody wearing a white coat. Nothing at MAHAC, we believe in a whole person concept. So we address the life stuff, and we address the medicine, and we address the psychiatry and emotional behavioral issues. But again, we're just a piece of that component. And again, it's really, it's a supportive work atmosphere here at MAHAC. And we try to bring that to the community and say, look, we got you in three different ways. I'd look, you know, something with a triangle is a better form of support than something on two legs or something on one leg. So having a tripod there, it's like, again, better support for people. I couldn't figure out where to jump in with and how to start with this. So I was writing down some notes as Dana hit it. I mean, out of the park in terms of describing the job aspect, our job description. But from a personal standpoint and how this links with COVID, I've done a few of these kinds of interviews for some internet newspapers and local entities. The thing that hit me, since we've been doing it since March, which astounds me, so life was already hard before then. So when COVID hit in March, we have a pandemic within an epidemic. We'll switch that around. So we already had the problem, and now we have a compounded problem. And I hear different numbers, and maybe the folks from DHHS can clarify that scientifically. I think everything is up, and people are under the idea it's about 30% of a return to use, and probably a 50% more anxiety at a level. So people who are already anxious are super anxious, and people who really might not have had anxiety, it's spiking. I'm somewhere in between that. I tend to vacillate. I always worry about my physical health. So if I get a sniffle or a cough, I worry. And I can imagine if I'm doing this, then I can imagine how other people are reacting to it. A couple other buzzwords I was putting down, and Rachel brought this up eloquently about recovery language. I try to not use the word addict or and words like clean or dirty in terms of drug testing, because it has a moral connotation to it. And I try to leave that out of the conversation and just, you know, but if the thought isn't in people's brains, it's like it tends to less stigmatize. So again, I tend to say person with, you know, a person with cancer is not a cancer themselves. They are a person with a symptom or a person with a disease. So I always try to emphasize that in conversation. I'd like to emphasize too that we meet people in the office and we meet people at their campsites or somewhere in between their back porch. Again, having safety and social distancing is, you know, keep us safe too and keep them safe. Personally, again, going back to what happened in March, when I found out I was not able to come to MAHAC campus, I realized how vulnerable I was. And again, it was scary because I thought I had it. And a lot of times that's, you know, with grandiose thinking, I got this. That's usually a step on the road to returning. And I suddenly realized I couldn't go to any meetings, any kind of meetings. I was stranded in my apartment, much like I was when I was in active use, because I couldn't go anywhere. I could maybe talk to people on the phone, and I get this sense of oppression and black cloud just moved in. So those first 2 weeks was super rough. I felt like I was back in active use because it had all the symptoms of active use. Isolation, again, can't go anywhere, can't do anything. And I had to really grope my way out of that. And I could just imagine what everybody else was going through if I was going through this. Because like I said, I got 15 years in some kind of wellness. And I found a lot of release, and I discovered Zoom. My technology curve went way up in terms of what I was able to do via long distance. And then when I went back to MAHAC, I realized how important this peer job is to my recovery. It's like, I'd love interacting with people, and it gets me out of my head, you know, as a peer support, as a modality for keeping people safe. A peer support's a great job, but you know, throwing yourself into it safely. I don't allow myself to think about my issues. I can worry about everybody else sometimes through a fault. And again, things like anxiety, my anxiety spike, my finances, I'm like, oh my God, I only have this much in the bank and I might not be able to go back to work. So again, these are all transferable to the community at large.
I'd like to add something in too. Just something good to share is I've been doing some meetings through Zoom too, and I can think of five different people during the meeting. We often say, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety who would like to introduce themselves? I have met five people with 3 days sober, 5 days sober. And I felt so inspired because I was like, wow, y'all are getting sober in a pandemic. You're on a Zoom call and you got 3 days between you and your last use. And that, I mean, we are strong and we are capable. We're rock stars and we're survivors. And I just want to leave you with this because this helps me in every aspect of my career, my education, and my recovery. Is compassion creates change, not shame. There's a lack of education around addiction, and I feel like I was shown a lot of tough love, and it's just not the move. It's compassion is what creates change, and I just wanted to add that in. But I appreciate y'all letting me share and be a part of this meeting. And I'm really glad that these conversations are happening.
Yep. Super cool. It's funny. I see folks like Philip still in community and myself. We've been doing this probably together for 10 to 12 years and we're still around. We're the old guard. Rachel's the cutting edge of the new folks coming along. So it's great to see this passed down, like not quite generationally. I'm not that old. But again, we're just getting to know each other and getting this team of people together at MAHAC to do more, you know, what we should do best, which is connect with people and connect with community. So I super appreciate being able to talk in a forum like this. It's a little weird for me, but we're good.
Yeah, and thank y'all for making time to come in here today. And so, yeah, me and Kevin, we go back. I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with the Neil Dobbins Center. So Kevin and I, Kevin was one of the first people that I worked with when I got out of prison. Because I was working at the Neil Dobbins Center as a behavioral health tech. And we got to, you know, both experience the overflow of co-occurring disorders. Co-occurring disorders is when a person has substance use disorder and they also have a mental health diagnosis. And so we've seen an overflow of that. Kevin, you probably remember when K2 and bath salts hit hard. Man, we had to get ready. We had to get prepared for, you know, the crisis clients. I'm talking about IVCs. I learned so much at Neil Dobbins. But, I also want to give honor what honor is due. So, you know, Upskill Western North Carolina was funded by the Appalachian Regional Commission, and it was all aligning with the Recovery to Work movement, right? And so one success story we have that's currently working at MAHAC is a client who came through Upskill. Her name is Belinda Gillespie. And so she's one of the peer support specialists who came through Upskill, who is now providing services at MAHAC. So this is what happens when we have an ecosystem and we have the right people at the table talking together and having these communications. And Rachel, you're spot on when you said compassion creates change. But 65% of the people in prison have substance use disorder. 65% you on a national level. That's probably just going by the ones who reported, because there are still some people who slip through the cracks. Mm-hmm. I have been working a lot with the people who are getting out of prison, and it has been challenging, y'all. The Social Security office is not open. The DMV is on an appointment basis only. Some of you may have seen some of the social media stuff I've been doing, but like they're booked out. Like I got a guy who got out of prison two days ago. Dang, this week's going by fast. He got out on Tuesday, and he has an appointment to get his ID, y'all. You have to have an appointment to get an ID. He don't go get his ID until the 25th. The 23rd is when he has his appointment to get his ID. You can't go to work without having two forms of identification. The recovery meetings, they touched on that already. You know, some of the employers who are hiring, who are willing to work with our folks, you know, a lot of times they're off the bus line. So we're still up against the transportation barrier, but we're seeing some success. You know, folks are getting creative. Halfway houses are starting to provide transportation more often now than they used to, because all halfway houses don't provide transportation and halfway houses aren't free. Well, I got y'all's attention. I want y'all to understand this is why I go so hard for people. Halfway houses are not free. They're anywhere from, I'm gonna let you tell you, Kevin, how much the halfway houses cost that you know about? How much would you say?
Starting at $600 and come on, up.
$600 and up. $600 and up. So that's why we fight so hard for getting these people's jobs. And I wanted to share something with y'all. This is a good friend of mine. We were able to get him into treatment, you know, and he got out and he went to work. You see me holding up a manufacturer's shirt. He was out there. He's killing the game. He was working a lot of hours. I ain't going to get emotional because I'm tough today. I've survived those emotions. But, you know, the pandemic hit. He was working a lot of hours. You know, the online meetings weren't cutting it for my friend, you know, and he's gone. May the 16th, he's gone. Sir Nathan, you already knew a little bit about that one. But that's what happens right now, like when people don't stay connected. And Zoom, it's working for some folks, but it's not working for a lot of people. It's not working for me, y'all. Like, to be honest, it is not working for, it's not enough. I have a faith-based men's support group that I was able to get a COVID-19 response grant through the YWCA to be able to pay for a space to have a group. And we don't let but so many people come in. We have sanitizer and face masks, and we're having it over at Umoja Health, Wellness, and Justice. But there, you know, I have to have that connection. And what Kevin said about the way it feel being in the house was the same way it was with an addiction, man. I got the chills because I remember days when I was, you know, barricaded in the Red Roof Inn on Smoky Park. I still can't get a room there, by the way. But but I can remember those days, and it was very, very similar to how it was during, you know, whenever we couldn't leave the house. But as it relates to workforce development, you know, I'm very excited that they have more peer supports staffed with Mayhek, as well as, you know, you got the Sunrise Community, and they're doing some amazing work with working with people returning from incarceration who have opioid use disorder. And so that's great what they're offering. And there are more grants going out, more people being able to get engaged to do the work. But it's going to definitely take having conversations with you workforce development ninjas, you know, and us collaborating on solutions, because we'll bring what we bring to the table as our expertise. Y'all bring what y'all bring to the table, and then we can put together a Megazord. And if y'all don't know what the Megazord is, it was on Power Rangers. It was when all the different Power Rangers and their Zords, they would combine and form what's called the Megazord. And then they would fight off the big monsters. Some monsters you can't beat by yourself. Or you can compare it to Captain Planet. I'm an 80s baby. You remember when Earth, Wind, Fire, Water, Heart, and then you get Captain Planet. So that's what we... that's on the lines. Some of y'all remember Captain Planet. But that's pretty much the update that I have. And as far as referrals go, you know, Dana dropped her info in there as it relates to Mayhek. As it's going with me right now, referrals, if you have a direct referral line with Mayhek, that would be best, Barbara, because they got the team of peers. Because what would happen is if a person came to me, I would turn around and send them. Actually, Barbara, we have a mutual client right now that I recently referred to them. Yep.
I talk a little about that.
So you and I have a mutual client that me and you've been going back and forth talking about. One of them is recently got referred to Mayhek.
Yes, and we have two individuals. One is actually a dislocated worker. They are both in treatment and both have interviews. One has interviewed with a local inclusive hiring partner company, and it looks like they are going to hire her through our on-the-job training program, where the employer gets a 50% reimbursement on wages up to a certain training period of time, not to exceed a certain maximum amount or not to exceed 6 months. And the other individual is a low-income adult, and we're meeting with an employer next week by Zoom to consider hiring her as a peer support specialist. So we don't have tons of money, but we're trying to work with Philip and his network to be more inclusive and to help with the employment end of this, of the program. So I hope this is going to go well, Philip.
Thank you, Barbara, and thank you, Philip. I know, and beyond just the human toll of addiction, and I need to make sure, you know, people, you know, have cancer, and to the, I think it was Rachel's point, this is a medical issue. I mean, if you go and you say, and you went to the doctor and you said, they say you have cancer, it's just like, okay, snap your fingers, you know, get out of it. And it's not that simple. So addiction is very, very similar to that. And we're blessed to have Glenn Phil with the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services Office of Rural Health with us. And Glenn is very familiar with a lot of work happening across the state in the substance use disorder area. And, you know, even though our area from Asheville to Hendersonville is urbanized, most of Western North Carolina is rural. And even in our urban counties, Buncombe and Henderson, there's many rural communities. So, you know, we really appreciate Glenn joining us today to give his perspective and how our region can better respond to substance use disorders in this time of COVID-19.
Thank you, Nathan. And it's great to be with you guys. And I see friends on the line, Heather, Barbara, Rachel. Philip, I've heard of you. It's great to be face to face with you. You guys are really inspiring.
That's all right.
We've got somebody. We'll mute them, Glenn. So I apologize for that.
Oh, that's all right.
We'll make sure everybody's muted.
I just thought and again, so excited everyone, I was here, but I guess it's something else.
everyone, make sure y'all are all muted. On your calls.
Sounds like a phone call.
No.
Yeah, I apologize. Yeah, I'm trying
probably,
to
I can't believe he did that.
Okay. I apologize. Dr. Fry, could you mute your phone? Okay, hold on.
I know, right?
Everybody. Okay, everybody's muted.
Yeah, okay. Let's say now you're forced to listen to me, but that's okay. Well, it's a very complicated picture, isn't it, friends? And I'm just going to, I love to hear what you're doing on the ground, because I've always felt like that's where the greatest impact of the whole effort of trying to deal with substance abuse, the greatest impact is on the ground, face to face, person to person. So it's inspiring for me, because I get dragged into a lot of meetings that are a little too high in the altitude. And then the farther away we get from the action on the ground, the harder it is to means test our ideas, our thinking, our plans, our initiatives. Are they actually going to work or not? And the only way they work is with people like you saying, yeah, it makes sense. So I'm always fighting that good fight and having the voice of the person who's affected by the services in the room all the time. So that's my philosophy. Addiction is very much still the pandemic within the pandemic. COVID has exacerbated many types of drug abuse. And that's because of the distress of what you've talked about, isolation, loss of economic or social connections, lowered access to harm reduction, lowered access to treatment and recovery supports. It's fueled overdose deaths by magnifying the effects of our ignorance and our stigma and our indifference. At the same time, as it evolves, as the picture evolves, COVID is fueling increases in harm reduction efforts, particularly syringe exchange programs. They're becoming more acceptable. We're getting better at introducing them to green communities through doing things like offering to clean up the needles in the park, helping the sheriff out with that, making syringes available to people who are not addicted but need syringes at times, people that are diabetic, so on and so forth. So there's a lot of things that are going on that are very creative in terms of the expansion of services. COVID's compelling safety net providers and DHHS and county governments and grantors and the faith community, Black and Latino advocacy groups to work together in new ways that foretell a moving away from just a medical model of treatment toward whole person recovery oriented care. So that's the good news. It's compelling us to think in new ways and to act in new ways. And some of those things will work and some of them won't. But at least we're getting out from our comfort zone and trying new things. And many of them probably will work very well. Longer term, I think COVID's effect on the substance abuse community will lead to a greater effectiveness of our coalitions away from small provider-centric, grant-dependent groups that are probably in many cases overly focused on one thing, and that would be increasing community awareness of drugs and their effects. Not that that's not important, but it's not the only thing that needs to happen. Toward being stewards of whole community recovery ecosystems. So that's my dream. So COVID is spurring new action research too. It's focused on outcomes and various interventions with a focus not so much on pleasing other academics, but an action research focus, you know, what works. And so there will be more involvement of folks like you in research, if you choose to be involved in it, I hope you do, that will teach us new things. COVID's increasing access to treatment now through telehealth expansion. You've talked about that. And we have a new Hope for NC helpline for people that are in crisis, whether it's mental illness, substance abuse, both. So there's a renewed interest within DHHS to try to do a better job of connecting people to help, because it's sort of been pigeonholed to the LME NCOs. And I worked at one for 10 years, and I know that's far from a perfect system in terms of access to treatment. So and that's being backed up by all of the money and effort, time, energy is being put into community health workers, going out into the community, helping people that otherwise might not be helped. I am personally in those conversations trying to make sure that we do what we can so that peer support specialists and community health workers can work hand in hand and not step over each other, not trip each other up while they're out in the community doing what you do. So when I think about the Western area, and I do most of my work out there, as many of you know, I think about Buncombe and I think about the counties to the north and east of Buncombe that were hot spots or at least pretty warm spots back in 2018 and 2019. It might be good to just talk for a minute about where we were and where we're going. Prescribers in Buncombe County and some of those other counties were doing a good job of reducing the number of opioid prescriptions back in 2018 and 2019. And that sort of got derailed in terms of its effects on overdose by the expansion of illicit synthetic narcotics, particularly fentanyl, so that now fentanyl is in almost every kind of street drug, right? You've heard this, you've seen it. There are people that are abusing benzos and other kinds of drugs who say, you know, I don't buy it unless I know fentanyl is in it, because fentanyl is so powerful, the high is so powerful. So the synthetic narcotics.
And Glenn, generally fentanyl's what's killing people.
Well, that's generally what, we've come to understand from the state coroner's office. And they try to keep up with all the analogs of fentanyl. They keep changing the molecular structure of it. So we are always kind of chasing after it. Now that, well, we could go off on fentanyl for a long time, so maybe we shouldn't, but that's a scourge, that's a problem. And we're trying to shut down the fentanyl that comes in through China, but that's a long-term thing. And I think that effort's got a bit derailed because of COVID, but I hope we can get back to that. Of course, we have new drugs like ISO that when the Chinese were feeling the heat about fentanyl, they went back into the old chemistry textbooks and found ISO, and that's a pretty nasty drug. So there's always something on the horizon, isn't there, that we have to deal with. So back then, like in 2018, the opioid death rate in Buncombe was 20.0 per 100,000 people. And that's compared to the state rate at the time of 13.6. So you had a serious problem with opioids. And the county experienced losses of $133 million in 2018 combined. That's from combined medical costs and total workforce losses. So that represents $509 for every man, woman, and child in the county. And that's a couple years ago. So it's higher today than it was then, I'm sure. Of course, the medical costs are much greater now because the OD visits to Buncombe EDs were 265 in 2018, but for a comparable period in August, ending in August 2019, it was 545. And then for the most recent data, which was based on August 2020, 795 visits to EDs in Buncombe County. So that's a tremendous increase in ED visits.
Glenn, do you think that's representative of the level of addiction in the community, those emergency visits for OD? I know a lot of our first responders now have the, and I've got a mental block now, but the drug that you can provide someone who's going through an overdose Narcan. Yeah. Right.
I don't know. If anybody else has any insight on that, please speak up. But I know that's an alarming number. And is it the result of more early intervention by EMTs, I guess is the question, that then, you know, encourage people to go to ED? I don't know. But a lot of people, what I hear from EMTs is, yeah, well, once we clear them, they don't want to go to hospital and they're not going to go to hospital. We can't make them go to hospital. So I think it's still an alarming statistic.
That is still just, you know, around two people per day. And that's just in Buncombe County.
Yeah.
And from August 20 to the year prior, two people a day are going to our emergency departments with overdose. So, you know, that's still pretty sad.
Yeah, it really is. And then as 2018 unfolded, something unexpected happened. It happened in your communities and it happened in many other communities in the state. And that was that there was a sharp, like a 3-month decline in OD deaths from opioids. And the thinking at the state level was, great, we've been working on this hard for 3-4 years. We created the Opioid Action Plan. We put together the OPDAC group to guide it. You know, did all these other things. And so there were reasons to believe that our efforts were having a positive effect after several years. That was a reasonable thing to think. And after all, practically every federal dollar and state dollar assigned to substance abuse was going towards intervention efforts related to opioids, and particularly prescription opioids. So, but what happened was that we failed to pay enough attention to the fact that there that decrease in monthly opioid ODs was being mirrored by increases in OD deaths from psychostimulants, particularly methamphetamine, and particularly also cocaine in the Black community and a rise of meth in the Hispanic Latino communities. And that's continuing. So that when you, it's absolutely affected the stats for you and for the state in terms of OD deaths. Yesterday, I don't know if any of you were on a call that a Dr. Rawson spoke about the rise of methamphetamine, new risks, current treatments. It was absolutely fascinating. And what I came away with was how deadly how disabling and deadly methamphetamine is, because it's not the old methamphetamine made from decongestant drugs in, you know, labs in the woods. It's now made by Mexican cartels, and it's much more potent than the old meth was, sort of like what happened with marijuana. So we don't, that's something we can't keep our we can't turn our attention away from. It's fueling a lot of problems in our communities, your communities. And we don't have any effective drug treatment for methamphetamine yet. But there is mega studies that Dr. Rawson talked about, meta-analyses of many studies involving 6,000-7,000 subjects, saying that contingency management is a really good form of treatment for methamphetamine. And that is rewarding people. I mean, it sounds sort of like parent-child stuff, but it's a legitimate type of therapy. And it involves recognizing that people have clean urine, recognizing that they've done the things that they said they wanted to do in their plan for recovery, and immediately giving them something positive, some kind of positive feedback for that in a form of gift certificates or something of that nature, so that the average contingency reward is like $200 over a month. Unfortunately, if you're getting Medicaid, they will only allow $75 in contingency management awards per month. So that's a problem. But be that as it may, contingency management can help with meth and people that are addicted to methamphetamines, addicted in the form of psychologically addicted. The other problem with these folks is that they don't feel like they have to use every day, so they don't really understand how they could be addicted. I mean, they see people that use opioids as addicted and going through withdrawal, but they don't see themselves that way. And they also, they have anhedonia, which is a psychiatric term for a really low level of motivation. So it's, even though they're suffering as a result of that abuse, it's really hard to figure out what will trigger them to get in the treatment and stay in the treatment, so that when people that have an opioid problem get in the treatment and are given buprenorphine, but they're also abusing methamphetamine, their rates of staying in treatment for 6-8 months go way down, way down. So we got a lot of problems, and that's a horizon. That's a situation that's really, very dire, and we have got to figure out what we can do for these people. It's going to take a lot of attention, money, time, and research. Okay.
Lynn, it's 2 o'clock and we try to end these calls around two. So just try to wrap it up, but we really appreciate you joining us. And we really, you've been a tremendous resource for our region as we're trying to access additional resources to support those in a recovery and really provide them the supports they need. So we're very grateful you joined the call. But if you want to just provide us a few closing thoughts, and then again, thanks to everyone for joining.
I'll just say two things. You probably have heard and noticed that alcohol use is abusing alcohol is really on the rise, so that now we have self-report studies. I've read two of them saying that North Carolina people that were forced to go to work from home instead of going in the office, 47% of them self-report that they're drinking during work hours. And alcohol intake has gone way up, especially for women in their 30s and 40s, drinking wine. Not necessarily many of them do not meet the diagnostic criteria for being addicted to alcohol, but it is troublesome, it's worrisome. So that all the money that was lost by bars and restaurants in our state because they could not serve alcohol anymore was more than made up by the ABC store sales. A tremendous amount of ABC store sales, even to this day, continuing a very high level of consumption. And then I'm just going to leave and say thanks so much for your time and listening. And that, as Nathan knows, I am particularly committed to vocational, to workforce development issues, Barbara and others. And we'll do whatever I can to assist you in trying to get the money and the programming together. I am working with Devin Lyle at Wilkes Recovery Revolution, who has got her hands around a great grant and is putting together a tremendous recovery-oriented program for vocational. And she has talked with the right people. And I'm really excited about it. And I hope that it's a model that many of us can take a look at and adopt. But she's just getting it off the ground, along with a recovery center that's kind of part of the whole thing. So thanks very much. Love this and love to do it again.
Thank you so much, Glenn. Thank you for joining us today. I know you're extremely busy. As you know, we're in the process of trying to pursue a ARC Inspire grant with the Southwestern Commission. So that would cover 11 counties here in the western part of the state. So hopefully we can make some progress there. But want to give a shout out again to Drew Christie with the governor's office, Philip Cooper with AB Tech, Dana, Kevin, Rachel at Mayhek. I hope I didn't forget anyone. And if y'all have any questions regarding these programs, reach out to me at nathan@landasky.org, and I'll try to make sure to connect you with the right person. So thank you again for joining us. Y'all have a wonderful and safe day. And remember, go out and vote in North Carolina. So we appreciate y'all being with us today.
And get your flu shot.
That's right.
Bye now.